The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have your company, Dave Kellner in the studio, and over the course of the next half hour, we will be previewing the five televised Premier League games this weekend. We'll have a look at the Football League as well, and Sam Norris will bring you a bet in Europe. I'm joined on the podcast by our Punt regular, Derek McGovern, and the chief sports writer from the Daily Mirror, Andy Dunn, who was at the Etihad for that incredible Champions League clash last night. First of all, a warm welcome to Derek, who joins us live on the line from Italy this Thursday morning. Good morning to you, Derek.
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I didn't see that game last night, but you were telling me off air, it was every bit as excited as it sounded like on the internet and in the papers today, so I'm gutted I missed it.
Andy joins us on the podcast. Andy, first of all, a warm welcome to you, sir.
Thanks, Dave.
It was the most incredible match I think I've ever seen. I didn't have a dog in the fight, as it were. I wasn't involved financially or emotionally, but I was just watching that and smiling throughout. It was a wonderful game of football.
It was. Funny you should mention that phrase. That's become quite a popular phrase, a dog in the fight, hasn't it? I noticed that there was a golfer, Billy Horschel, an American golfer, and he tweeted last night, "I didn't have a dog in the fight, but that was a hell of a soccer game." I mean, so it's captured the imagination all over the world by the sound of it. Yeah, it was great. I mean, as Derek would appreciate, it wasn't exactly... it's not like I was at the coalface or anything, but it wasn't exactly easy work, sort of with a couple of minutes to go and you're writing a report on the whistle. It changed a few times, that's for sure. If it had been paper, it would have been scrunched up and thrown away a few times. But we got there in the end. People like Derek, who used to correct all my reports, he'll know what I mean. It was hectic. There was a few laptops going up in the air. When Raheem Sterling scored and then didn't score, and Pep was jumping up and down and then was sank to his knees in desperation. Incredible night. You know what, it was a great atmosphere as well. I mean, I thought it was all a bit twee, this idea of, let's produce a great atmosphere, and they gave everyone a flag, you know, as if some acrylic flag is going to intimidate professional footballers. But it was a brilliant atmosphere, set by Sterling scoring early on, and just an incredible game. It really was. Defence is on top. That's what I like to see.
It was great for those watching on TV. What was it like in the stadium? Because with VAR, you have that instantaneous release of emotion when your team scores a goal. Is that going to be tempered from now on? Because you always be thinking in the back of your mind, well, what if?
No, it's great because you actually get double celebration. We didn't know in the stadium. No one knew that there was any doubt about Raheem Sterling's goal, in inverted commas, in added time. No one knew in the stadium that VAR was checking what had happened. It was just assumed it was a goal. All our eyes on Guardiola's celebrations, the whole celebrations of all the players, Spurs players prostrate, you know, on the floor, you know, in desperation. All eyes were on that. We had no idea. The first idea you had was when it came up on the big screen, no goal, you know, VAR has disallowed it. And then you get the mad celebrations of the Spurs players and fans as well. So you've actually got two. So you've got actually, you know, well, double value for money, but basically. It was incredible. I don't think... The thing with VAR last night is that I think it was quite a defining moment for the system in a way. In that actually, you know, we're still debating whether those decisions, the Llorente goal being allowed to stand and the Sterling disallowed goal, we're still debating those. But I don't think anyone is actually saying that VAR spoiled the occasion last night. Okay. It will still go down as one of the great Champions League, European Cup, footballing occasions, even though VAR played a crucial role. And listen, 20 minutes after the game, when I was still trying to write the report, the Spurs fans were in there and they were singing songs about VAR. They were, you know, they'd finished singing about Son and Pochettino, and they were praising VAR.
Is that what we want in football, Derek?
No, certainly not. It mightn't have ruined a fantastic occasion last night, but it's ruined plenty in the past, and it'll ruin them in the future. Football was a brilliant game. We didn't need it. I don't want it. It just ruins it.
So what happens? What happens, Dale? If Spurs don't, you know, a magnificent achievement to reach the Champions League semi-final. What happens if they had not reached the semi-final because City had scored an offside goal?
Well, it's happened a million times before, Andy. It's part of the injustice of football, and you know it keeps his argument for forever. I want that. I'd rather have that than this VAR, this clinical VAR business, which just interrupts the flow. You know, it's the greatest game of all time, football. Everybody loved it around the globe. But now there's a lot of people in my camp who think it's ruining it. We didn't need it. And why? How can you have it in the top level football when you're not going to have it in lower level football? You're not going to have it in amateur football. What makes this season or like the next few seasons so important that they have to have VAR, whereas in the last 10 years ago they didn't? I just don't understand why we need it.
Hey, bear in mind, I think you need it, but bear in mind though as well, don't forget, we didn't actually have VAR in the entire Champions League competition. It only came in the round of 16.
That seems a bit ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah. And as we've had with the FA Cup this season, we've had it in some games and not in others. But I don't think, you know, listen, just because you don't have it in amateur football or whatever, it doesn't mean, you know, I'm sure when you're playing, Derek, in your local tennis club in Liverpool, you know, you don't have Hawkeye, do you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
he still uses
a wooden racket, actually, as well, Andy. Yeah, go on, Derek.
There was an incident I think it was Brighton-Burnley game a few weeks ago, or, you know, a month or so ago, when it was an obvious penalty that should have been given, no VAR in operation, an obvious penalty that should have been given, and then Burnley went up the other end and scored, I think. Now, right, had VAR been in operation, the Burnley fans would have been going, you know, yes, fantastic, we scored, and then it would have been dragged back for a penalty, like, you know, a minute or so earlier. It just doesn't seem right to me.
It is. I mean, just very quickly, Dave, we won't go on about it, but it's right. Someone points out yesterday, had, for example, Sergio Aguero not passed to Raheem Sterling and had shot, and the shot had been saved and gone out for a corner, and City had scored from the corner, the goal would have stood.
Yeah, yeah.
There are issues to be decided with it, but, you know, listen, you can't, I don't think you can turn back the tide now. I mean, when Dell says, oh, well, you know, injustices were part of the game, well, you know, people have been getting away with murder for years and years. You still don't want them to do it, do you? Mm.
The latest betting for the Champions League, by the way, here at William Hill, Barcelona 6-4. They meet Liverpool in the semi-final. They're 5-2. Tottenham take on Ajax. Tottenham are 7-2. Ajax in the betting at 4-1. Let's talk more about Manchester City and Spurs, because that's the first TV game this weekend. Manchester City 27-100 to win the game. The draw 5-1. Spurs 10-1. Loads of enhanced odds and your odds on the William Hill website and on the app. And one of them, Raheem Sterling and Son Heung-min, both to score in the match, was 5-1. That's been enhanced to 8-1. Of course, that happened on Wednesday night. Does that result on Wednesday, Derek, make Manchester City more likely or less likely to win this game, in your opinion?
Well, that's it, Dave. That's the $64,000 question. So many imponderables here. Will City collapse after that? Will Spurs put all their eggs in the Champions League basket? Will I ever have another winning nap? I find this one impossible to call, but when you just said the odds there, did you say Spurs 10-1?
They are, yeah.
You know, I'm in Italy now, and I'm finding it difficult to log on, getting all the prices. But when you were reading out the prices, I thought you'd probably say Spurs top whack 5-1. I thought you'd say. I can't believe the 10-1. So everything I was going to say about this game, it's in the dustbin now. I've got to go for Spurs at 10-1, because there's no saying it's impossible. The bookies are saying there that Spurs don't care now. You know, but they don't know that. It's just conjecture. Spurs could be on an absolute. Well, they will be on an absolute high. City on an all-time low. And yet Spurs are 10-1 in a game that they've still got plenty to play for, by the way, because third spot or the Champions League spot is far from sewn up. I think that is the most ridiculous price I've ever seen, apart from whatever I pay for my clobber. 10-1 is ridiculous.
They were dominated, obviously, for large spells, Andy, on Wednesday night. But it's testament to Mauricio Pochettino's management, what he did without the likes of Eric Dier, Harry Winks, Harry Kane. Sissoko only played half a match. Serge Aurier was out as well, half fit Dele Alli. And they still cause City problems with the pace up front.
Absolutely, yeah.
I thought it was a great performance.
And they had Hugo Lloris in goal as well. It was incredible. But no, you're absolutely right. It was, and of course, tactically, to send on when Sissoko was injured and he sent on Fernando Llorente, you know, that surprised most of us. Okay, he didn't really have a like-for-like replacement, but he had plenty of defensive options. Instead, he sent on a striker. You know, and a striker, by the way, you know, hasn't exactly set the Premier League or the Champions League alight. And altered his formation, dropped Dele Alli a bit deeper, and it worked out eventually via his arm and his hip, of course, but it eventually worked out. So it was a bold move from Pochettino. And I have to say, I totally echo everything Derek's just said. I mean, Spurs were, the price I saw for them last night to win that game individually, of course, which they didn't, was about the same, 9-1, 10-1. 10-1 is a ridiculous price. You know, listen, bear in mind now City's mentality. You know what? I went to see some City players on the day before the game, and they genuinely believed that they could do the quadruple, and they were devastated after last night. And I think he'll change things around, Guardiola. Don't forget that the City have United next Wednesday at Old Trafford as well. And I just think the Spurs will go there. I agree with Derek. They've got a lot to play for. They'll be on a high. And I certainly wouldn't be back in Manchester City at what odds were they, 27-100? Yeah. I wouldn't be backing them to win that game at all.
What's the latest with Leroy Sané and Pep Guardiola? Because there must be some friction there. To not see him until the final few minutes of that game seems absurd to me.
Yeah, but don't forget, Dave, we didn't see him until the final 2 minutes of the first game.
Yeah.
We didn't see Kevin De Bruyne until the final 2 minutes of the first game, which, when you look back at it all like today, you could say is the biggest mistake that Guardiola's made in his career at Manchester City. De Bruyne was magnificent last night, and for him not to play in that first leg, well, to come on along with Sané late on was bizarre. I can understand why he didn't play Sané yesterday. Listen, you know, Bernardo was back, and, you know, he had a great game. The balance of the team, I thought, looked okay. But clearly him and Sané are just, you know, he just doesn't like Sané's attitude by the looks of it. Sané is very much his own man. I don't think he quite buys into the sort of, the cult of Pep.
Yeah.
You know, in a way a lot of the players do. He seems to be quite sort of an individual who, he sometimes has that look of a Mesut Ozil about him. He sort of, you know, he goes around the pitch. He doesn't do the same sort of tracking back. Occasionally he does, as most of the players. And they clearly just don't get on that well. Having said that, you know, he's an electrifying star. I suspect he'll play. He'll start on Saturday. But I'm with you. I mean, for Mahrez to play, for example, ahead of Sané like he did, like he has done in several games, just seems slightly odd.
Okay, Spurs may be the value in that game at 10-1 then, as we move on to Newcastle versus Southampton. This is a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Newcastle 29-20, the draw 21-10 with Southampton, also available at 21-10. And Andy, away from the obvious, these two have been the success stories in the second half of the season. Since Ralph Hasenhüttl took over, Southampton are picking up points at a rate that, if they maintain that throughout the season, would put them in seventh spot. And Newcastle come into this on the back of another surprising away win at Leicester.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are two teams who've, as I say, in recent weeks, I mean, they've been doing what they should be doing in terms of what squads they've got. They shouldn't really be in some sort of desperate scrap to stay in the Premier League. I like the look of Southampton here. I like the look of the manager. I spoke at the last England get-together to James Ward-Prowse, and obviously he would be very complimentary about the manager, but he spoke in detail about what he's done on the training ground, about the way he has them playing in a more aggressive, intense style. And I think he's got a big future, the manager, in the Premier League. And I fancy Southampton to go up to Newcastle and get a result there.
21-10 they are to win the game, Southampton. Nathan Redmond is the man that's been inspired since Hasenhüttl took over. He's 9-1 to score first and 15-4 to score any time if you're looking at those goal scorer markets. Derek, your views on this one?
Well, I'd say both sides will show limited attacking intent, and by that I mean none, because a point of peace will suit them right down to the ground, that ground being St James Park, of course. I've never been so convinced about a match ending all square, Dave. I really don't. You look at the way they are in the league table. There's still, you know, there's still the outside threat of them, both sides going down. I know that Cardiff is some way adrift, but that winning Cardiff winning midweek changes the complexion a bit. And I think both teams will be absolutely made up with a point. I intend to have half of everything I have left on the draw in this game, and then the other five are on 0-0, because I don't think there'll be an attack where they know. I think both managers are clued up enough to know that a point apiece will pretty much guarantee both of them safety, and then they can take their they can go on holiday then.
Here's one for you, Derek. You'll like this. When was the last draw in the Premier League?
Well, any match, you mean?
Any match.
Jesus Christ. Well, I would have said last week, but I can't remember. Obviously not. You're going to go back to about 1982 or something, you know.
34 matches, Derek. 34 matches over a month since the last draw in the Premier League.
Jesus Christ.
I've
got the law of averages.
Precisely. There'll be a lot of people perming the draws this weekend. That's an unbelievable stat, though, isn't it? I could not believe that.
No, I think you're wrong there. Sack your research, that can't possibly be true.
It's unbelievable. 34 matches without a draw in the Premier League coming into this weekend. Derek going for one in that game. 21-10 the draw, Newcastle versus Southampton.
Friday night's Eredivisie game catches the eye this week as a meeting of a team still with plenty to play for against a side who could already be freewheeling toward the end of the season. Of course, it doesn't always work out this way. The team who need the points don't always collect them, but Heracles are right in the mix for a potential Europa League qualifying spot next year, and a home game against a mid-table side in Heerenveen should have been circled on the calendar as a golden opportunity for 3 points. A late penalty denied the hosts a valuable point against Feyenoord last time out, which would have read very well coming into this, especially given Feyenoord comfortably dispatched Heerenveen 3-0 just a few weeks before. Aside from that defeat, Heracles had won 3 of their previous 4, with the other game a defeat to Willem II in a crazy match where they trailed 3-0 early on and almost came back to steal it, eventually going down in a 4-3 loss. Whereas Heerenveen's form reflects their league position, it's middle-of-the-road stuff. Their only win in the last 5 games came against second-bottom Excelsior, and they look right for the picking, and a home win at odds against appeals. Back Heracles at 23-20 as the nap this week.
Let's move on to Sunday then. Everton versus Manchester United first up. 1:30 kickoff. Everton 21-10 to win the game. The draw 12-5. Manchester United in the betting at 13-10. Derek, you might be at the wheel, but the wheels have come off the Manchester United bus. They've lost 3 of the last 4 in all competitions. They were lucky against West Ham to pick up 3 points in their most recent Premier League match, and they were really battered away at Barcelona. I know it's Barcelona, but they were. Smashed in that game at the Nou Camp, and it's maybe not even one of the best Barcelona sides we've seen in the last decade. Manchester United are stumbling towards the finishing line.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you watched Everton against Fulham last week, you'd probably say United were cert here. If you watched Everton against Arsenal the week before, you'd probably say Everton were cert. But if you watched United against Barcelona, you probably laughed your head off, because that's how bad they were. And yet, you know, the Man United top guys, the head honchos, will be thinking, Christ, why didn't we wait till the end of the season before we appointed a new manager? Because it's gone pear-shaped big time for Solskjaer. He's got an awful lot of work to do. I don't know what it is. Is it an indictment of the players again?
Yeah, they're not good enough, are they?
A boss he didn't want.
They're just not good enough, the players, are they, Derek?
Well, probably not. But, you know, that's not what everybody was saying when they were rattling off those 8 wins or something on the spin when Solskjaer took over. I don't know. I can't work it out. I mean, they've got plenty of talent there, haven't they? They've got talent to give Barcelona a better game than they did the other night. I don't know what it is with them. Everton, though, Andy will know better than me. He's a big blue. But what's going on with them? You watched them against Chelsea. You watched them against Arsenal. I was so impressed with that game, with that performance. More impressed with that Everton performance than they have been in about the last 10 years, any of their performances. And then they followed that up by losing against a team who were already relegated. I asked the Blue Nose earlier in the week about that, and he said that He said some of the big players who are turning their on in the big matches live on TV, they're not that bothered. You know, don't want to be in the shop window on TV. They're not that bothered in a game against Fulham. It's not on telly. I'm not. Surely that can't be true, can it, Andy?
I wouldn't have thought so. That cannot be true. Listen, what I would say about the game against Arsenal is that Arsenal, obviously, you know, away from home, I've been pretty abysmal all season. And we're lucky, actually, against Watford the other night. I didn't see the Fulham Everton game, but again, my mate said it was absolutely dreadful. I mean, it really was. I'm not convinced about Marco Silva. Still not convinced about him, I have to say. I think the recent wins, the recent good results that you referred to, I've basically kept him in the job, because I honestly think that there might have been some doubts about his future had the indifferent form continued. As for United, I mean, that was a poor performance, obviously, in a new camp. And I was actually at the game they won against West Ham, and it's very... I can't remember the last time I saw the team so fortunate to win a game.
Yeah.
Somehow, though, I just think that away from home in the Premier League, they've been fairly decent under Solskjaer. And I just think that he'll make some changes for Sunday. I think he'll start Lukaku, and I think United will win this game. I just think there will be a response from United. And you know, listen, they know now, I mean, as unlikely as it was anyway, that Champions League, the route back into the Champions League via winning the Champions League is now well and truly closed. And they need to get into that top four. And I think they will go there and win on Sunday.
13-10, Manchester United to win the game. David, what's your prediction?
Yeah, I probably would still go for United, because I know it's a big match on TV, so these big Evertonian players should turn it on, but there's nothing in it for them, is there? You know, it's not, you know, United have still got a top four place to play for. Everton have got nothing to play for, and United are more than, you know, odds against rather than odds on territory. So I always back the team that has something to play for.
By the way, Anthony Martial has scored in each of his last three Premier League games against Everton. If you're looking for him to score first, it's 5-1 for him to score any time. It's available at 17-10. The other TV game on Sunday is Cardiff versus Liverpool. Cardiff 14-1 to win this game. The draw 11-2 with Liverpool in the betting at 1-5. That's short. And I get the feeling this might be tougher than those odds imply, after Cardiff reduced the gap to 2 points following their 2-0 win against Brighton, who are in free fall at the moment. Brighton, still unlikely, Andy, to drag themselves out of trouble, given that Brighton have that game in hand, but at least they've got a chance now.
Yeah, well, when you say Brighton have got a game in hand, you mean Brighton have got a defeat in hand. That seems to be the way it's going at the moment. Yeah, Brighton have got one more loss to rack up. Brighton in free fall. Listen, I mean, what did you say? 20-1, Cardiff?
No, not quite that big. 14-1.
Well, 14-1. If I thought that, I'm sure someone would probably give me 20. But 14-1, 14-1, a home team in the Premier League. I mean, but I'll tell you what backs that up in a way. I read a stat the other day. Now, I'm not sure this is up to date, but it's fair to date. Of the bottom three teams in the Premier League, I've played the top six a total of, I think it's 32 times, and they've been beaten every single time. Yeah. A team in the bottom three does not beat a team in the top six, and hasn't done this season, the last time I looked at that stat. So I guess that's where the 14-1 comes from. It's hard to see past Liverpool, isn't it? You know, Cardiff, I think Neil Warnock will look at Brighton and their free fall and think that, hang on a minute, like, you know, if the other three winnable matches, obviously there's this game, and then the other games they've got, he may well target them. But having said that, you know, it's a home game, Sunday afternoon, and on telly, big occasion. I'm sure it'll be closer than the odds suggest, but I still wouldn't back against Liverpool.
Maybe you're looking at Liverpool just to edge it 1-0 or 2-0. 13-2 Liverpool, 1-0. 9-2 for Liverpool to win the game, 2-0. And if you're after a first goal scorer, Sadio Mane, incredibly, he's scored first in 8 of Liverpool's last 12 matches now, Sadio Mane, which is some stat. He's 3-1 to score first. He's got 10 in his last 12 in the Premier League for Liverpool, and was on the score sheet midweek against Porto as well. Andy mentioned that stat, Derek. Cardiff have actually lost their last 18 in a row against Arsenal, Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, Manchester United and Spurs. But at least they're down there and scrapping.
Yeah, well, that result in midweek, I mean, that really does give them a fighting chance. It didn't pick up 3 points there, they were down. But, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel for them. They could have done without this game, of course. They could have done with a game against a bog-standard team with nothing to play for. This is anything but. I've backed against Liverpool every week, as you well know, Dave, because the odds are always ridiculously short. And I thought this week I'll have to stop it because I'm making an absolute chump of myself. But I can't back him up 1-5 against a fired-up side run by a manager who despises Liverpool for what he reckons they did to his, was it Sheffield United side, I think it was, a few years ago. Mm. I can't back Liverpool at 1-5. You've been playing in Europe. It's just too short. Obviously, I'm not going to back Cardiff to win because, you know, as Andy just said, the record of the bottom three sides against the top six is diabolical. So I can't back him at 14-1. But Cardiff with a two-goal start, got a certain je ne sais quoi about it there. I don't know what it is though. I think that's the way to best, surely.
Are you in Italy, Derry?
Yes. I know, wrong language.
Coming out with the je ne sais quoi.
Cardiff plus two goals, by the way. Odds again, 6-5, Cardiff plus two in the match, if you fancy that angle in and opposing Liverpool this weekend. Let's finish with Chelsea versus Burnley. Monday night kickoff, this one, 8 o'clock. Chelsea long odds on, as you would anticipate, 24-100. The draw 5-1, with Burnley in the betting at 12-1. Chelsea, of course, lost against Liverpool in the Premier League last weekend. We're recording this prior to their second leg against Slavia Prague in the Europa League. Burnley in a rich vein of form at the moment as well. They've won the last three against Wolves, Bournemouth and Cardiff. But Chelsea at home are pretty tough place to go, Stamford Bridge. That's highlighted by the fact they've lost just one of their last 20 home games in the league. That came back against Leicester in December. And no side has actually conceded fewer goals at home in the Premier League than Chelsea. Same number as Liverpool going into the weekend of 10. Chelsea, Andy, long odds on to win this game against Burnley.
Yeah, I wouldn't back them at those odds at all. I quite fancy Burnley. I think they're in a good place at the moment. Now you just came out with all those stats about Chelsea's home form. It seems a little bit fanciful. But I do think that Sean Dyche has got Burnley playing half-decent football. He'll love it there, and he'll love going up against Maurizio Sarri as well. Maurizio Sarri, who smokes 60 a day. Sean Dyche, who sounds like he smokes 60 a day. It'll be a fascinating meeting of those two guys. And I'll tell you what, I'd take the draw in Burnley ahead of back in Chelsea.
Burnley or the draw is available at 3-1. And if you fancy Burnley draw no bet, that is a big price as well. Burnley draw no bet is available at 8-1 here with William Hill. Dwight McNeil's impressed this season for Burnley. He's been one of the standout performers. He's 20-1 to score first, 13-2 to score any time. He's been directly involved in 8 Premier League goals this season, scoring 3 times. He scored actually in the game that I went to at home against West Ham earlier in the season. He impressed in that match, so maybe he's one to look at. Derek, Chelsea versus Burnley.
Yeah, what Andy says about Burnley, I can understand that at any other stage of the season, I might be tempted to have a dabble at that bet he's outlined there. But this is the running now where Burnley have got nothing to play for and Chelsea have, and it's at Stamford Bridge. You might say Burnley's still not safe, but they're 8 points clear of the bottom three, 9 counting goal difference. So, you know, this is almost a gimme match for them. If they were suddenly in danger, if Cardiff were to beat Liverpool, which is unlikely as we've seen, there's plenty of other matches that they can pick up points in. I just can't see Chelsea making a mistake here. I thought they were fantastic against Liverpool last week. Absolutely fantastic. Everyone's raving about Liverpool's second half performance, but had Hazard got those two chances right, it would have been 2-2 and Chelsea could have easily gone on to win. I thought they were sensational, and they'll beat Burnley here. In fact, what I'm doing is I'm backing Chelsea to win to nil because I can't see Burnley scoring.
Chelsea to win the game to nil is available at a price of 10-11, Chelsea to win to nil in that match on Monday night. Now, all that's left to do is get the best bets for the week. Andy, given you are our guest this week, what's your best bet?
I fancy United to bounce back, and I fancy Lukaku to start and to relish his return to Goodison. Lukaku to score first, and to be over 2.5-3 goals in the game.
Okay. Lukaku to score.
He's actually confident. Yeah.
9-2 Lukaku to score first in the match. And if you fancy over 2.5 goals in the game, yeah, that is available at 17-20. For the purposes of this treble, I'll just put in Manchester United to win the game at 13-10.
Perfect.
Derek, what's your best bet?
I'm going for Newcastle Southampton all square draw. It's got to be a draw.
Newcastle Southampton to draw the game 21-10. Let's hope there's a draw this weekend. It's been a bad time for the bookmakers with no draws. Manchester United at 13-10, the draw 21-10, Newcastle versus Southampton. And I'm going to go with a plain simple nap, Wolves to win at home against Brighton, as you have outlined on this podcast, chaps. Brighton in free fall at the moment, and Wolves should win that game at home. So 3-4, Wolves to beat Brighton. That treble pays 11.47-1 this weekend. Derek, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
Enjoy the rest of your holiday, Derek. And Andy, thank you for guesting on this podcast as well.
I'll have to check that statistic about the draws. I definitely am. Arrivederci, Derek.
Okay.
Au revoir, as they say out there.
Thank you, chaps. We're going to finish this podcast with a look at the Football League and the company, first of all, of Pete Farris, who has a bet in the Championship.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and in the Championship this week, I'm going to take West Brom to win and both teams to score as my 9-4 nap. Why? Well, West Brom have been bagging the goals recently. 3 at home past Swansea, 3 at home past Birmingham in a 4-1 win over Preston, but they've only kept one home clean sheet as well, going far back as Boxing Day. For Hull, well, they have been brilliant under Nigel Adkins on the whole, but they have been struggling on the road. Just one away win in 2019 means Hull cannot be backed here. Plus, their playoff race is pretty much run. It's simple for me. West Brom and both teams to score at 9-4 is my Championship nap of the week. Have a very, very happy Easter. Let's head over to Gav Puszulowski and get his thoughts on League One this week.
Let's hope it's a good Friday with my nap in League One. It's a case of if it ain't broke, then don't fix it. Last weekend's nap was over 2.5 goals between Charlton and Luton at 21-20, and we had 4 goals in that game. I'm hoping for something similar between Burton and Portsmouth, two teams going head-to-head who are in fine form. Burton have won 4 in 5, Portsmouth have won 5 in 5. Burton at home have scored 11 goals in 3 games, Portsmouth away from home have scored 8 goals in 3 games, and Portsmouth have scored in every single away game so far this season, bar 2. So both teams to score between Burton and Portsmouth seems absolutely glorious at 4-5, but over 2.5 goals, bear in mind Burton have scored 3-5-3 at home, and Portsmouth have scored 3-2-3, over 2.5 goals is 11-10, and these teams drew 2-2 earlier this season, so that is my nap at 11-10, over 2.5 goals between Burton and Portsmouth. Looking at League Two is Al Ross.
There's one what I think is a very obvious bet in Good Friday in League Two, and that is Crewe. I've mentioned it several times this season already, but their home form for a mid-table side is impressive. In fact, only promotion-chasing Tranmere have won more home matches in the league this season. You'd have won backing Crewe at home more times than you would already promoted Lincoln. By the way, Carlisle are 11-5 to capitalise on Lincoln's parties this week. That is worth a look. Back to the nap, though, that is Crewe. 13 home wins from 21 games this season, also 7 home wins from the last 10, but they are not even the main reason I am backing this bet. Yeovil are. Some of the teams at the bottom are fighting tooth and nail for every point. Yeovil, not so much. 19 games in 2019, 14 of them defeats, only 1 point home or away from the last possible 21. Backing against them is easy. Backing against them on the road is even easier. 8 away games since the start of February, 7 of them defeats, only 2 goals scored, and they are at Crewe. So backing against them is even easier still. Crewe, near even money as well, 17-20.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.